What is up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome into another episode of the Tables, Tailgates, and Top Loaders podcast. This is episode 7, to be exact. I am your host, TB, aka Tim Beardsley, and thank you all so very much for stopping in and checking out the 3 T's. We have so much to get to, so let's not waste any time. Let's dive right in. Bills fans, Mafia members, the floor is yours. How are we feeling? Now, last week, we closed out the podcast by talking about the Bills' schedule, and we talked about how they are favored in every single game on the calendar. Every game, 17 games favored in each and every one of them. And as I talked about, that's pretty rare. That doesn't happen very often, but it got me thinking about the bigger picture. What does this all mean? How is this team, this Buffalo Bills 2025 team, viewed? How are they viewed on a national level? How are they viewed in the local market? And regardless of how they're viewed, does any of it even really matter? Does it matter to the team how they are viewed on a national level? Does it matter to us how they're viewed on a national level, us as fans? I don't know, actually. As I'm thinking about this, as I'm trying to dissect it all, looking at it all has got me thinking about what the expectations are for this 2025 Bills team. Now, obviously on the team level, so management, coaching staff, players, their expectations at this point, in my opinion, they have to be to get to the Super Bowl. If I'm a coach, if I'm on upper management, if I'm a player, that's my expectation to get to the Super Bowl, win the whole damn thing. It has to be, right? Because after 7 years of success, I feel like it's been building and building. Playoffs, AFC championship games, the only logical step is the Super Bowl. So I would say this aligns with what some of the national viewpoints are. Because I think if you look around, a lot of the national pundits, a lot of the writers, the people on radio shows, whatever, they think this team's going to be pretty good. So for the Bills to be betting favorites in every game, people think this team is going to be really, really good, in fact. But the way I look at it, that's kind of the easy part. It's easy to look at this team even as an outsider, even as someone who's not really a fan, even as a casual observer, and see that this Bills team has a very good chance to not only do well, but they have a legit shot, in my opinion, a legit shot at making a run at the Lombardi Trophy. So as I see it, that's the easy conversation to have. But what are the expectations for the fans? And this is what I was thinking about. What are the factors as a fan that define what a successful season is? And does your definition of success change depending on the type of fan you are? So I started to think about the types of fans. And let me start by saying this. This is not a shot at anyone. This is not me taking shots at the types of Bills fans there are out there. It's just a way to kind of break this down. And it's kind of a way to, or how I interpret the fan base. First of all, you have the people that consider themselves fans, but it's on a very small, safe, simple level. So totally fine. So maybe they watch some games or most of the games, but for them, it's not, oh, I got to set my alarm. I got to set my clock. It's not a rearrange my schedule. It's not must see TV. Maybe they watch highlights. Maybe they check out stuff on socials. Maybe they go to a game or two if possible. Maybe they buy some merch. I would say these are your low investment casual Bills fans. And that's fine. We'll put these in the casual fan box. They want the team to win, but it's not going to impact their life from one game to the next, one season to the next. Then there's the flip side of the coin, the diehards. Maybe some people out there look at the diehards as psychos or lunatics. I don't know. Maybe that's how people see me. And so be it. But I always wonder what percentage of the fan base this portion is. These are the lifers. These are the ones I feel live and die with this team. Not literally, of course, but the ones, and I consider myself to be in this category, the ones who, right or wrong, are impacted in some way by the success and by the failure of this team. The ones who feel as if the team is somehow embedded into the fabric, the very fabric of their being. Like I said, this is not right. It's not wrong. It's just kind of how the way I see it. Now, personally, going back to episode 1, why I started this podcast journey, this team has been a significant part of my life since about as long as I can remember. As I said before, I'm 46. It's all I can remember. 40 years supporting and loving the Bills. I used to listen to the games on the radio. I used to read articles, cut out player pictures in the newspaper. And then as I got older, I would make it a point to try to find ways to watch nearly every game, despite, you know, going off to college, moving to different states, moving all over the country. I would find a way to stay in contact, you know, not in contact, but to stay connected to the team, know the players, buy the merch. And then finally, as I got older and became in a better position. When I was financially, geographically in a position to do so, I was blessed enough to become part of the season ticket holder group, the season ticket fan base. Now, I travel 5 to 6 hours to get to a game. I know there's people that travel further. It's not me tooting my own horn. I'm just laying it out there for you. I travel about 5 to 6 hours to get to a game. I listen to local radio shows, local Buffalo sports stations. I read articles. I get on websites. Like I follow the team. This team is a part of me. And I know there are others who have a much longer, more intense resume than me. You know, so if you want to rank levels of fandom, there are ones that do way more and travel further. But you get the point. These are the people. This is a group of people I'm thinking about. So knowing the history of this team, what does success look like to these fans? So the diehard Bills fans, is it truly Super Bowl or bust this year? 2025 Buffalo Bills upcoming season, is a successful season truly Super Bowl or bust? Now, this is the tough part, right? Is the only way to measure success by hosting the Lombardi Trophy at the end of the year? The way I see it, there are fans in a similar age bracket as myself, many, many people older than me, who have experienced both the high times, both the high periods in the last 40 years of Bills football. The first being the run in the late 80s, which led to obviously the 4 straight Super Bowls in the early 90s. As we talked about before, that team is ridiculous. At some point, we'll do a deep dive into those teams on future episodes, but I think that stretch created a cycle that is now permanently etched in the brains of these older fans, and I consider myself to be a part of them, and the cycle goes like this. Hope, confidence, heartbreak, repeat. I'll say it again. Hope, confidence, heartbreak, repeat. So part one, hope. Here comes July, usually right around the time of the year, right as this podcast is coming out. So you start planning, you start hearing, you start talking about training camp. It's either just starting or it's just on the horizon. Players start showing up. You start to get that early buzz. And here comes this idea of hope. You start to feel it. You start to believe it, right? You don't want to feel it. Sometimes I think as a Bills fan, it would be easier if you didn't. But there it is. You get this sense of hope and it starts to mess with your head. It's that voice. You all know what I'm talking about. It's that voice in your head that says, maybe this is the year. Maybe this is the year we win it all. You all know exactly what I'm talking about. So then after hope, here comes part two, confidence. Confidence. Now the season kicks off. The team starts cranking out wins. Maybe they put a nice stretch together. Maybe they crush a team who was supposed to be, you know, on an equal or level playing field. Maybe the team was supposed to be better than them and the Bills just straight truck them, right? So they crush them. As the season goes on, they might have a letdown game here or there. Every team is bound to drop one or two of those a year. But for the most part, wins are coming fast and furious. And your confidence, well, this is the glorious part about part two. Confidence, it keeps growing through the season. It keeps building and building and building. And so what do you do as a result? Maybe you start talking a little louder. Maybe you throw out some smack talk. Maybe you start walking around, you know, with more confidence. Maybe you're wearing your gear everywhere. Now, most diehards wear their gear everywhere, so that doesn't really matter. But you know, maybe you start wearing your gear even more than you normally do. And the end of the year's approaching, playoffs are start coming into focus. You feel on top of the world, ready to take it all. And then it all comes crashing down, and we get to part three, heartbreak. Right. So we all know this part. Wide right, Super Bowl disasters, lost helmets, turnover machines, terrible breaks, Music City Miracle. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. One after another, after another, after another. It's like we feel like the football gods have turned their backs on us. Upstate New York, Bills Mafia, Bills fans. It's not okay. Games we know we should have won, teams we know we could have and should have beaten. It's so frustrating. Heartbreak enters in and it just destroys us. It breaks our hearts. Sometimes we get mad. Sometimes we rage. Sometimes we yell and scream. Sometimes, if you remember me at 11, Super Bowl loss, sometimes we cry. It's just miserable. It's absolutely worse. It's the worst, the absolute worst. And this cycle continues to repeat itself for many, many years, especially through the 90s until poof, what happens? Suddenly we turn around and it's all gone. The very definition of hope has seemed to have changed, because now where we were once hoping for a Super Bowl and winning the Super Bowl 4 straight, we couldn't get over the finish line. There's no hope for the Super Bowl. There is no hope for the Super Bowl because we're in the middle of this drought, right? So now it's not hope of making the Super Bowl. It's hope, can my next coach tie his shoes right? Can he find the podium after the next loss? Can he remember the name of the quarterback we way overdrafted? I mean, fill in the ridiculousness blanks. It's crazy, right? Hope takes on a completely different viewpoint, a completely different meaning. So expectations during the drought years, I mean, I don't even know. I felt like there were barely any expectations. I remember when the season was kind of hanging on whether or not we could shock the world, shock the NFL world, and beat Tom Brady once a year. That was our Super Bowl. Once a year, beating Boo Boo, that became the game we kind of hung our hopes and dreams on. So 17 years of this crap, right? 17 years of literally no hope. And then it all seemed to come back into focus, come back into play right around 2018. Suddenly, we have brought along a whole new group of younger fans. And now suddenly this younger group of fans can get to learn and experience this dreaded cycle that I brought up. They can experience it for the first time. They can experience it with the older group who has experienced this over and over again. And I put my kids in this group. My kids, thank God, are huge Bills fans. They love this team. They love the experience. They love the players. They love Orchard Park, the whole deal, the tailgating, everything. They love it. But they are a part of the group that never knew what the first period was like. They didn't experience the first high times. They didn't know that time in history, in Bills history, nor did they experience the drought, right? Because by the time they were old enough to really get into all this, make their own decisions about which teams to root for, we were kind of out of it. So us older fans, well, guess what, folks? Lucky us, here comes round two, the second wave, the second boom period. So again, let's play it out. Here comes a new hope. Not the Star Wars movie, but we get new faces, actual players who can play. We get coaches for the most part who seem to know what the hell they're doing. We get a sense of direction for the franchise. And we get a young, exciting quarterback who in 7 years has literally taken the league by storm and has proven so many in the NFL draft gurus completely wrong about what they thought this young, raw, inexperienced kid out of Wyoming can do, right? So the first few years, we see glimpses of what he can be, what is to come. It is awesome. And as Bills fans, as a huge mafia fan base, we are excited and we get this hope once again. So what happens next? Round two, here comes the confidence. As Josh starts to get experience, the team starts to gel around him. Years and games become building blocks and the core of this team grows stronger. They grow tighter. I mean, you can see it. They like being around each other. It's a totally new atmosphere from the drought teams. Totally new atmosphere, totally new culture. And what happens as a result? We start to smoke teams again. We start to get that swagger back. We start to beat teams here and there that we're not supposed to beat. And we start to get that attention, that national attention. And we are no longer the laughing stock of the league. We are no longer irrelevant. And that's all thanks to JA17 and this cast of awesome teammates and company, right? So here we go again. We got the hope, we got the confidence. And yet, despite all that, round three, here comes the heartbreak, right? This time, it takes the form of 13 seconds. It takes the form of defenses that don't bother to show up in the playoffs. It takes the form of poor coaching decisions, dropped last second passes, time after time, year after year. Here we freaking go again. Heartbreak. It's always entering right back into the equation. And sometimes we rage, just like before. Sometimes we cry. But the worst, in my opinion, the absolute freaking worst is sitting there in absolute silence. And that's exactly what I did after the last AFC Championship game. Game is over. We lost, and I just sat there in pure silence because I didn't know what to do. I didn't know what to feel. I didn't know what my response should be because at 46, and like I said, I don't ever want to compare myself to people who have been rooting for this team way longer than me, and like I said, their fandom resume far outshines me, but you get to a point where there just are no words. You don't know how to describe what keeps happening, and you start to wonder if this will ever happen. You start to ask yourself, how much more of this can I actually take? And this is the frustrating part. This is the part that sucks about the heartbreak portion because there are so many times I wish I just didn't care. I wish I didn't give a crap. I wish I wasn't invested. I wish I was just one of those first group of fans we talked about, the casual fans. A loss, a season ending defeat didn't impact me in such a way. And the problem is at this point, it's just become a part of me. It's part of my DNA. It is what it is. It is who I am. And that's the hardest part to explain to someone who doesn't get it. It's the hardest part to explain to someone who says, it's just a game. It's just a game. Why are you getting so upset? Now, I'm not saying impacts me to the point where I can't leave my room and I can't function and I can't do the things I need to do as a husband, a father, as an employee, right? That's not what I'm talking about. But, you know, your mood changes. You're like, it sucks. It just freaking sucks. And so, yes, it is just a game, but it's so much more than that. And this is the part I struggle with. And I really believe that there are other Bills fans like this. And so, you know, there's probably outsiders that say, oh, this guy needs some freaking professional help. And maybe they're right. But it brings me back to the beginning of this conversation and what are truly the expectations of us as this fan base. How do we define success? How do we look at 2025, 2016 and say, yeah, that was a successful year. This is a absolute huge year for this team and for this franchise. It's historically significant, obviously, because this is the last year at the stadium. So Highmark, DeRalph, Bill Stadium, Rich Stadium, whatever name you want to call it, it's the last year. And there's a lot of emotion that's tied to that for a lot of people. So you start to think, is it possible? Is this the year of all years? Is this the year of all years to find success if it doesn't include raising up that Lombardi trophy? And so personally, I need to kind of take a step back. I need to make it a focus, especially this season, to kind of zoom out a camera a little bit. Zoom out the camera, slow it all down, take a broader, bigger view. And this is where I encourage everyone, young, old, all types of fans, to do the same, because it's crazy what's going on. Please don't take this for granted. Bills Mafia, I beg you. If you are a new fan, don't take this for granted. You don't know what it's like to not have Josh Allen. Like, I think there are so many fans that take Josh Allen for granted. He's literally one of the greatest football players in the league. Top three, top five players in the league. Easy, hands down. Can anybody really argue that? He's one of the greatest players in the league, and we are absolutely blessed to be able to watch him lace it up every week, play in the NFL week after week for our team. That is so freaking rare. It's so rare, especially in this league. I encourage everyone, take a step back. Don't take it for granted. Enjoy every second of it, because really stop and think about what we are seeing when Josh takes the field. It's like history in the making, and you never know when this ride is going to come to an end. So enjoy each game for what it is. Enjoy the history of the stadium. Enjoy your fellow fans. Enjoy your fellow Mafia members. Enjoy being a part of something that I think is kind of way bigger than me. It's way bigger than you. It's bigger than all of us. Try to be a part of something bigger. Try to find success in the little things that hopefully this year of all years, hopefully the little things lead to bigger things. That would be the absolute ultimate storybook ending, wouldn't it? Think about it. Wrapping up the incredible history of this stadium by hosting and then winning. That's right. I said it. Hosting and winning the AFC Championship game. The last game of the stadium. Can you imagine if the last game we play in the stadium was in the AFC Championship, we win it to go on to the Super Bowl and we ultimately break this freaking cycle? Because if that happens, all the heartbreak that's happened year after year, time after time, will have been absolutely worth it. So I had to get that out. I'm glad I did, but I really wanted to talk about that. Anyway, wrestling fans, how are we feeling? So Monday Night Raw. Let's go back. Monday Night Raw. It was okay. We have brand new tag team champions. The New Day dropped the belts to McDonough and Finn Balor, the Judgment Day. I was happy to see this. New Day really wasn't doing much of anything. I don't know. I feel like they dropped the ball with that, with the New Day. They had a great turn with Big E, and then it kind of just went nowhere. So I was happy to see Finn. Finn's one of my favorites. It's nice to see him get some gold back. I love the work he's doing, especially the backstage segments with the group, with Dom, Liv, Raquel, and now bringing in Roxanne into the mix. I think it's pretty great stuff. Pretty great stuff all around. Lyra and Bayley had a match that ended in a weird draw. Very weird. You don't see that too often, but clearly, I think this is paving the way for a triple threat match between them and the man, Becky Lynch, at Evolution. It was a good match. It was a good segment. Lyra does not seem at all out of place on the main roster. I mean, she is crushing it, if you ask me. Great segment. I think she fits right in. She's doing great work. Gunther, my man Gunther. He comes out, cuts a great promo on a non-existent Goldberg. So happy he wasn't there. And that was great. So good promo. Rollins comes out, interrupts, talks a bunch. Punk rolls in. It's a whole schmazola. LA Knight, you know, it's round and round. There's so many people. And it's all setting up Saturday night's main event. Great, fine, whatever. At one point, Punk pushes Gunther down. I don't know, maybe he slipped and fell, but it looked really weird. That was stupid. Goldberg. Gunther, you got to get up. You can't be pushed to the ground. You're the champion. Don't get pushed by Punk. That looks weak. Weak as hell. Anyway, we get lucky us fans. We get another Goldberg video package. Thank goodness. It was definitely what my life had been missing up to this point. More Goldberg video packages. I'm so happy they keep doing this. And I see what you're doing, WWE. I see you. I see right through your garbage. I know you are trying to use bomb-ass songs to get me to care about this near 60-year-old. Shout out to 3 Days Grace and the song Dominate. That was awesome. Such a shame to waste it on this trash video package that we have seen a billion freaking times. So, just want to say that, but I see your games, WWE. I see your games. You're trying to get me to care about something by using awesome music and I see right through you, so it's not going to work. Another segment that made zero sense, Rhea Ripley. She's talking to the, she's down in the ring. She's talking, she's rambling on. And here comes women's champ Io Sky. She comes out and challenges Rhea to a match. What? I'm watching this. I'm like, in what world does the champion ever come out and challenge someone to a match? I guess they tried to clear it up because GM Adam Pearce told her she could pick whoever she wanted, but that's stupid. We don't have champions challenge people. That makes no sense. I thought it was mad dumb. So anyway, whatever. That's clearly being set up for Evolution. And anyway, we move on. AEW Dynamite, pretty good show. Opening segment with Adam Page. He's doing his thing. He's talking and he's rambling on about Jon Moxley. And at the end of his speech, he challenges Moxley to a Texas death match. And then all shenanigans break loose. We go round and round. They say Texas death match about 50 freaking times in a matter of 5 minutes. And finally, the stipulation is set. It's Page. It's Jon Moxley at All In Texas in a Texas death match. And then to show that Adam Page is super serious about this match, he then proceeds to hit Marina Shafir with the buckshot lariat after she's left all alone in the ring by herself. So he clotheslines her and she's like laying there in the middle of the ring. So that's the only way to show how serious he is about the match. Sure, whatever. So anyway, there's a fatal four-way match, pretty good fatal four-way match for the number two spot in the casino gauntlet match at All In. MJF finally takes the victory and post-match shenanigans ensue. Hurt Business beats down Jet Speed, which I think is the stupidest name for two pretty good guys. They need a new name. That's like got Vince McMahon written all over it. Jet Speed, that's a dumbass name. Anyway, Mercedes wins again. Toni Storm sitting there for the whole match, looking like she's in a coma. It makes no sense. Then after the match, they scuffle, and Mercedes gets the upper hand. She hits her with the belt. Whatever, it's fine. Young Bucks, they are part of a Heroes vs. Villains trios match, and they're with Takeshita. That's a pretty good match. They win the match. Swerve Strickland, Will Ospreay come down, and they're all scuffling around, and there's a whole lot of shenanigans, and they're setting up this match for All In, which should be, in my opinion, the highlight of the night. And there's some stipulations on it about control of the company. And if the Young Bucks win, then Swerve and Ospreay can't challenge for the title for a year. So whatever. Pretty cool. Another match, the main event, Okada versus Ibushi. Pretty good main event. And there's a post-match beatdown. Kenny Omega comes out, makes his save, and again, setting up more stuff for All In. All In's going to be awesome. It is going to be a great show. It's probably going to be like 12 hours long, but hey, whatever. It's must-see pay-per-view television, folks. Don't miss All In. I think it's going to be great. And then I just kind of want to jump back into WWE for a minute, talk about the winners of the King and the Queen of the Ring. Now, last show, we talked about Night of Champions. We talked about the finals of each tournament and what ultimately led to Cody Rhodes and Jade Cargill being crowned the men's and women's winners, the King and Queen of the Ring. Now, as I said, the Jade match, it was fine. Hopefully, I mean, the problem with that match is nobody cared. Nobody cared that she won, and I'm really hoping that she can use this as positive momentum, do some good work in the near future. I think she can do good stuff. They just got to make a few tweaks, and I think she can have a good shot. So I went back and I looked at the history of the Queen of the Ring, which is actually pretty short. There have only been three tournaments for the ladies. Three tournaments. This started in 2021. Zelina Vega, she was the very first Queen of the Ring. She won it at the finals. Can anyone guess where the finals of the 2021 Queen of the Ring took place? Anyone? Anyone want to guess? If you guess Saudi Arabia, then you have been following the 3T's program, and you are absolutely correct, because everything happens in Saudi Arabia now, it seems. Whatever. And then the next one, 2024, we skipped a couple years. Nia Jax wins. No, I don't know how y'all feel about that. I thought that was garbage, but I get it. They're turning her into this powerhouse, like unbeatable force. So crushing everybody. So she won the Queen of the Ring. And anyone want to guess where that took place? Okay, again, in Saudi Arabia. And now Jade, which was also in Saudi Arabia. Anyway, not much history there. Three queens. We shall see if this can, if they can kind of build some tradition, some momentum with the ladies. I would like to see this actually get some run. Like, let's use this. Let's make this kind of big, kind of important. But we shall see what happens. The men's side, obviously, there's much more history there with with the King of the Ring tournament and history. This has been going on for quite some time. And I remember when I was a kid growing up, like, this was a pretty big deal. They used to have entire pay-per-views dedicated just to this event. So it was a huge deal in the 90s, early 2000s. You had Bret and Owen Hart win. You had Triple H. You had Kurt Angle. And, of course, the victory speech by Stone Cold Steve Austin that kind of, you know, catapulted him into the stratosphere where, if you remember this, he had just beaten Jake the Snake, and Austin then proceeds to produce, you know, the historic, iconic 316 tagline. You know, Austin 316 said, "I just whoop your ass," and then boom, now it's everywhere. It's on t-shirts, it's on signs, it's on literally everything, and he is a megastar. So this all happened because of King of the Ring. But I'm looking back through the history of this tournament, and there's one winner who stood out like a sore thumb, one that is simply just not like the others, and that's none other than 1995 King of the Ring. I don't know if you all remember this. 1995, the winner was none other than Mabel. That's right, Mabel. And I bet some of you are saying, who the hell is Mabel? Well, let's take a trip down good old memory lane, shall we? Mabel, back in the day, had a partner named Mo. Do you guys remember this? Mabel and Mo. And then they had this rapping manager named Oscar. So if you put Mabel, Oscar, and Mo together, what does it spell? It spells mom. But they couldn't call them mom, so they called them Men on a Mission. You follow how that crazy 90s logic works? Men on a Mission. And they were supposed to be this trio of real positive guys who would go around to like inner city communities, inner city bad neighborhoods, and they would talk about making positive changes and improving things. And if you haven't seen this, you need to check this out. Go pull up the YouTube, check out some old raps from the Men on a Mission WWF team. And specifically, if you can only watch one, pull up WrestleMania 10 Men on a Mission video. It is glorious, glorious. Some of this stuff that they managed to rhyme is pretty badass. Anyway, at some point, Men on a Mission, these guys, they turn heel. Gone is all the positivity. Mabel becomes a singles wrestler. And then Vince decides to push Mabel to the moon. He tries to turn him into a huge, vicious bad guy. So fast forward to King of the Ring pay-per-view. Like I said, it's a standalone pay-per-view in 1995. And this show, well, it's something. Yeah, it's something. If I had paid money back then, I can't remember what they were in 1995. Probably $35-$40 for a pay-per-view. But if I had paid at that time, $40. If I paid $40 to watch King of the Ring 1995, I would have felt like I got completely ripped off. So Mabel, in the first round, Mabel faces The Undertaker. Now, Mabel is close to 600 pounds. So his matches, well, they're absolute crap. They're crap. Now, he's slow. He's lumbering. He's not that great. And there's tons of shenanigans in this match. There's a run-in from a wrestler named Kama, who in the future turns into Godfather, who we talked about before. Mabel manages to beat The Undertaker somehow, which is shocking to everyone. He advances to the finals because in the other first round match, which was Shawn Michaels and Kama, they fought to a 15-minute draw. So you have these two guys fight to a draw, and they essentially eliminate each other. So now Mabel doesn't have a second round match, so he gets to jump right to the finals, which is total crap because Mabel's terrible. And then in the finals of your pay-per-view, you have Mabel versus who? Savio Vega. Yeah, I don't even want to waste time going down the Savio Vega path. Don't worry about it. This is your match, Vega versus Mabel. Mabel wins the match, and he's crowned King of the Ring. He sits on this throne they put together. They put this cape on him, which looks terrible. And then for some reason, they decide the king gets a legit sword, like a full-size sword. So they hand King Mabel this sword, and they put this terrible cape on him. Anyway, it's not great, Bob. He is then pushed after this pay-per-view as a monster heel. He goes on to have some major feuds with guys like Diesel, who, if you remember, Diesel was Kevin Nash. He came into the WWF as Shawn Michaels' bodyguard. So he has a feud with Diesel. He has more of a feud with The Undertaker, but he never wins. And allegedly, if you kind of dig around and look up articles on old school Mabel, he injures both of these guys pretty badly during these feuds. And I think it just pissed a lot of people off. So Mabel kind of goes away for a few years, then he comes back. If you remember Big Daddy V, Viscera, they brought him back as part of the Ministry of Darkness, which I think is funny because now he is part of the Undertaker's gang after he literally, like, I think one of the injuries to the Undertaker, like he crushed his orbital socket or eye socket or some craziness like that from doing the 600-pound leg drop on his face. But anyway, it's, I don't know, Big Daddy V, yeah. You're not missing much, but to put a big Mabel-sized bow on this whole thing, I got to say, yeah, looking back to the history of the King of the Ring winners, Mabel, yeah, you are the worst. Sorry to tell you, 1995, if you're ever in the mood to watch really bad pay-per-views, this has got to be up there, but I wouldn't waste your time. So that about sums that up. So what they decide to do with King Cody, you know, flashback to present day, King Cody Rhodes, well, most likely it looks like he's going to be facing Cena at SummerSlam. If I'm a betting man, he's probably going to win. But then again, who knows? If he wins, then you know you'll have people say, oh, finally, everything's all right. Everything's back to the way it's supposed to be. Everything's right in the world again. I don't know. I really don't want to see King Cody versus John Cena, but we shall see what happens. All right, folks, time for some hobby talk. Card collectors, how are we feeling? Now, Topps recently ran their pre-sale for 2025 Topps Chrome Baseball. This product comes out July 23rd. I looked at it. They were selling hobby boxes for $199. In a hobby box, you get 80 cards, either one relic, one auto. So $200 for 80 cards. How we feel about that? And then jumbo boxes, which are completely sold out. They sold out relatively quickly after the pre-sale went live. The jumbo hobbies were $399, and you get 132 cards. So 400, 132 cards, and they're gone. What is this product? It's a 300-card base set. It combines all your guys from Series 1, Series 2 flagship. I went back and I looked. I checked the checklist. It's not too much to get excited about. You got a couple guys that basically carry over from Series 1. You got James Wood for some reason. Have you guys noticed this? James Wood, right? He's crushing it. He's absolutely crushing it, and he's getting no hobby love. Zero. I mean, zero. His prices are maybe slightly going up, but I don't know. People are sleeping on James Wood. This dude is awesome. He's awesome. And wait till he gets comfortable and he starts putting on some bulk and some muscle. This dude, look out, because this guy's going to take the league by storm. I'm telling you, mark it down. If you are in the market for investment, this is a guy. James Woods is the guy. We also have Dylan Cruz, his teammate. Now, he's been hurt for a good portion of the year. He's kind of struggled too, but right before he got hurt, he started playing a lot better. He's in this product again. Him and Woods were basically your poster children for Series 1. Jacob Wilson thrown in there. He's from Series 1. He's been playing pretty dang good. Ben Rice, maybe we can add in there. He's okay. I mean, he started the season on fire. But then you have Kobe Mayo. I mean, he's done nothing. He's been terrible. He was supposed to be, you know, one of the highlights of flagship, but nothing so far with him at all. So I don't know. I feel like the further we get into this season, the less I like the look of flagship. Series 1 came out. I bought a bunch. The product was fine. I'm not sold on the way it looks this year. I don't know. I'm not about it this year, guys. I'm just not. I don't like it that much. I will take Heritage over this one every day of the week. And I know what you're probably saying. Heritage sucks. It's for set builders, blah, 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 blah. High number, Heritage High Number, which came out earlier. That product is amazing. You still can't find it. And then 2025 Heritage. I love the look of that product. If you put those two up against flagship Series 1, Series 2, I'm going to take Heritage all day, every day. So what else we got coming up? Some other new releases. On the horizon, we have 2025 Panini Donruss Elite Football. This product releases on July 16th. Now, this is a 200-card base set. You get 100 vets and 100 rookies. This product actually doesn't look too bad. Not too bad at all. They have a Back to the Future insert set which look really cool. These are autograph cards. Now, I am a huge 80s and 90s fan, so any retro cool shout out you can do to those two decades is a win in my book. You're looking at right around $300 for a hobby box. You also have 2025 Topps UFC Chrome. I know this came out recently. These are actually selling pretty well. This came out on June 27th, I believe, and you're looking at roughly $250 for a hobby box. You got a ton of other basketball, football stuff. I don't know, basketball, football fans, how do you all keep up with this? I feel like there are so many products out there, so many products, and I guess you could say the same for baseball too, but I kind of ignore some of the non-licensed stuff, so I don't even look at Panini and all the baseball crap that there's no logos on, but there's a ton of basketball product, a ton. And then for pure nostalgia, folks, here we go. This is my If Money Were No Object buy of the week. I am buying a hobby box of 2025 Upper Deck Fleer Scooby-Doo. That's right. Have you all seen this? These cards look pretty damn cool. Now, I know they're not that expensive. I think they're like $150. So really, if money were no object, it really shouldn't apply to this, but I would never buy a Scooby-Doo hobby box. So if money were no object, if I found it on the street as I'm walking down the road, maybe I'd go throw it on a Upper Deck Fleer Scooby-Doo hobby box, because these designs are really cool. They have classic designs from the 80s, from the 90s, and they're kind of intertwined with the series. They showcase some of the favorite characters. They got villain cards, monster cards. There's a 100-card base set. It features all your favorite characters. It features the Mystery Machine. Have you guys seen these memorabilia cards? These memorabilia cards are pretty, pretty cool. They are manufactured swatches, or like, you know how you do in baseball where you get a patch or whatever the case may be. You can get a manufactured memorabilia card of the actual Mystery Machine. It looks like it's a piece of the tire. So now I know it's probably not from the Mystery Machine, but I think they're cool. I've seen some other ones. It looks like you're getting Scooby-Doo's dog tag. Hey, like I said, why are we in this hobby? We're supposed to be in this hobby to have fun, and these have fun written all over them. Like I said, character, villain cards, good guy cards. There's cool things. There's relics, like I said. Anyway, a lot of cool stuff in this product. I encourage you. You don't have to run out and buy it. Just give it a look, because they're pretty fun. They're pretty cool. Also, don't forget, there's still time. Run out and get your Rambo Keepsake Collection Premier Edition. I talked about this a couple episodes ago. These are awesome. I would definitely get a box of this if money were no object. I still have my eye on these. I'm hoping they drop in price, because I'm not paying that money. Again, maybe if I found the money somewhere. Someone wants to send me a box of these, there you go. Set me up, hook your boy up with a Rambo Keepsake Collection. What else am I getting into? Marvel Chrome, Topps Marvel Chrome. Love these cards. I am piecing some of my favorites together one card at a time. I'm buying the base cards because I think they're pretty cool. Hobby boxes are still ridiculous. I'm not spending $500-$600 on a hobby box. I see that blasters have come down just a little. Right now you're looking at about $50 for a blaster, which I still think that's crazy. Maybe if they get down to 40, I will dive in. But what I'm doing, I'm kind of piecing together the ones I like, and I'm paying literally like $2 for these on eBay. So I've already gotten some of my favorites. I've put the Guardians of the Galaxy together, and there's some others that I have my eye on. But I love these cards. The prices on the Wolverine insert, the scratch cards that we talked about before, they are still through the roof. But as I said, this product is awesome, and I freaking love it. So there you go. Anyway, I think that's going to wrap up this episode of the 3Ts podcast. If you have enjoyed this episode or any episode of Tables, Tailgates, and Top Loaders, please do me a favor. Please, please, please share it with someone you know, whether they are a mafia member, a card collector, or someone who just loves wrestling. It doesn't matter. As I said before, I'm trying to grow this one episode at a time. So please hit the follow button. Leave a quick review for me. Let's help build this thing together. I appreciate you all very, very much. So until next time, whether it's ripping packs, breaking tables, or dropping elbows, keep doing what you love. And as always, go Bills!